Welcome to Get Up in the Cool, old-time music with Cameron DeWitt and friends. This week's friend is Kilby Spencer, and he's kind of my new favorite fiddler. I wasn't able to fully enjoy his fiddling while playing with him because I was really concentrated on trying to keep up and not make a fool out of myself on my own show. But I finished editing our interview and jam just right now, and my jaw was on the floor the whole time. Kilby's awesome. And the best part is, I didn't even get a chance to be intimidated because he's one of the nicest, most hospitable people I've met in my travels. He let me crash at his house through a bunch of amazing musicians with awesome stories in front of my microphones and fed me all the fried chicken I could eat. 5 stars. Would do business again. I don't think it's a coincidence that Kilby's a kind and generous person and a fantastic fiddler. His story's full of gratitude and humility because he came to this music more honestly than most of us do. And I think that understanding of what he's doing, why he's doing it, and where it all came from is apparent in his playing and living. I learned a lot playing with him and had a blast. I'm so glad I got some of it on tape so you could all catch a glimpse. Stick around after the interview for details on how to hear more of Kilby's music and how to support Get Up in the Cool and get access to exclusive bonus content. Let's get started. Kilby Spencer, everybody. Enjoy. Kilby Spencer, welcome to Get Up in the Cool.
Thanks for having me, Cameron. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And so here's what happened for the listeners at home. Kilby said he'd host me for a couple nights and that he would just round up some people for me to record. Usually I like do all of the organizing myself, but this is, it's been a real treat to just show up and he just puts people in front of me and I record them and they're all amazing. So last night we did your whole family and crew and then Lucas Paisley. And now, since I didn't get a chance to ask you your story, since there's so many people here, now it's just me and you, then I wanted to hear what it's like growing up with Thornton and Emily, and yeah, just hear your old time story. So,
well, I'm 35 years old, and I was lucky. This area, it's Northwest North Carolina, Southwest Virginia, is full of traditional mountain music and musicians. So you can almost throw a rock and hit one. You know, that's the way it is. But my parents have been in the White Top Mountain Band for I guess roughly 40 years, maybe even closer to 50 now. Yeah. The band was actually started back in the 1940s by Albert Hash. Albert married my dad's older sister, and my dad got interested in fiddling. He started fiddling in the late 40s, early 50s. And he and my mom got married in the 1970s. I was born in 1982, and actually I have the same birthday as Albert. So that was kind of strange. Albert unfortunately passed away in 1983, so I never really got to know him. But growing up, my parents played music all the time. I mean, my mom just recently retired from basically being a full-time music teacher, teaching mountain music in the local schools. And Dad ran a country store and mostly played music. You know, that's what they did, and taught music to people too. And they didn't push it on me. So when I was a kid, I really, you know, wasn't super into it. There was lots of dances, festivals, and stuff going on. I would go to them, but lots of times I would like sleep on the stage, you know, sleep in a bass case or something, just not that interested in it. And then about the time I was probably 13, 14, I could play tunes, you know. I mean, you, when there's instruments around the house, you're a kid, you pick them up, I might like, knew like two, three tunes. Wasn't super interested in it. Then it became part of the school curriculum in Grayson County Schools in White Top, Virginia, where we lived. And, of course, Mom was the teacher. Albert had actually started the program back in the, I think, early 80s, and it kind of ended up in the schools. His daughter taught for a while, Albert's daughter. Then Mom took it over. And it was called the Albert Hash Memorial String Band Program. So it became part of the regular curriculum. Me and some guys around my age, all of us had relatives who played music. You know, my parents, Albert, so on and so on. My buddies had great-grandpas, grandpas, whatever, played music. None of us were that interested in it. Then when it became part of the school program and we had 2 hours a day where that we could do this, we all got super interested in the music. And and it's made it all that much better to find all these family traditions that were, you know, all of us were tied into it. So from then on, I was really into learning all the music I could, the techniques, and about the people, sitting down with the people and talking to them, because there's a lot more to the music than the notes. Yes. You know, the people, people behind them is probably the most important part. So me and some of my buddies, specifically Blake Rash, his great-grandfather taught Albert Hash how to play. So we had that connection. Me and him would go around, sit down with you know, some of the local fiddle players and record them, jam with my mom and dad on weekends. So that was kind of what we got into to doing by the time, I guess, I had a driver's license. So, but that last tune we played is called Richmond. And it's a lot of local fiddlers play it. I learned it from mom and dad. I think dad learned it from a Galax fiddler named Otis Burris, who was really successful at local conventions in the 50s and 60s. And was well known. He had a really exciting driving sound and kind of a wild fiddle style, is what I would say. So that's kind of how I got started into it. And, you know, I'm just thankful I was able to appreciate it, you know.
Yes.
Because there's always a chance you just, it's too late and you don't appreciate it until it's too late. But I was lucky.
Did you like school in general?
Yeah, I like school pretty good.
It wasn't like a this like kept you interested in school or anything. It was like just like an extra fun thing to do.
Yeah, we had a unique environment because White Top is an very small community, and it was a K through 12 school, and there was only about 80 or 90 students in it most of the time. The school's no longer there actually now, but so I graduated with five people in my senior class. So it was a good school because you had a lot of individual attention and the teachers were good and most people were able, if they wanted to go to college, you had a good head start, you know, well prepared for school. So, and well prepared for playing music. There's a lot of, you know, good local musicians that kind of came out of that program for sure.
Right on. So. Yeah. Your mom, Emily, was saying that, she wants to like turn that old school into like a community center or art space or something like that.
It would be a great thing. It's I can't remember when the first part of the school was built. Maybe it's like in the 20s or 30s or something. I mean, it's a great building. It's a shame. I wish they had never closed it, although I understand the reasons for it. It's pretty far out in the county and everything, but it's perfect for a community art center, you know, music camp, who knows,
totally. That sort
of stuff, if the right stuff happened.
So, yeah, maybe someday.
Yep.
What's next on this list?
The next one is called Lafayette, and after we get done playing, we can talk about it.
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Lafayette.
Lafayette, yeah.
Wonderful.
That's another one I learned from Dad, and also a cousin, Dean Sturgill, plays it. And it's I've been told it was a tune that Thomas Jefferson, who was a fiddle player, one of his favorite fiddle tunes. I know.
Really?
He's credited with, I don't know if he's credited with writing the song Liberty, you know, which is another good fiddle tune. But I know he played Liberty. And supposedly Lafayette was high on his list of fiddle tunes that he played. So
I didn't know that he was a fiddler.
Yeah. And I don't know. There's not really a whole lot of local history about that one. I suspect it's a reference to Lafayette, Tennessee. And there's a group that used to play on the Grand Ole Opry. I mean, it probably started back in the 30s, Fruit Jar Drinkers. And Kirk and Sam McGee, the McGee brothers, Kirk McGee played the fiddle. And that was one of the tunes he played. And I know that Dean... my cousin Dean, who I'll talk about a little bit more later on, played that tune, and I think he might have learned it from listening to the Fruit Jar Drinkers or the Crook Brothers playing it on the Opry. And you got to think, in a certain period of time, where there wasn't a whole lot of records, especially fiddle-related records coming out, say in the 50s or whatever with rock and roll, that one of the ways to learn new tunes would be to tune in to the Opry for that very brief 3 or 4 minutes.
Right on.
That there was a fiddle band at that point on the Opry. So yeah. I guess that tunes like that stuck with you if you heard them.
Interesting. Yeah, it's cool down here. It seems like there's a lot more... When I record people up north or in different areas of the country, like they always talk about like mostly source recordings that they listen to, you know. But around here, just in the today and last night, it's a lot of... Yeah, I learned this from this person who learned it from this person who learned it from the source or things like that. It's really cool to hear like a lot more living oral tradition.
Sure, it's really cool. It's interesting. I mean, it's lucky that basically this area, North Carolina and Southwest Virginia, that although there was some danger of old time music maybe dying out a little bit at certain points, it never did die all the way out. And thankfully, there was recorded documentation going back into the 20s, so it's pretty easy to keep it alive. And you know, like I said, I wasn't that interested in it. And then when I got interested in it, I'm like, well, all these people that Dad talks about that he learned from, or that Albert learned from, that have passed on, there's got to be tape somewhere because people were passing through. So I started hunting.
Yeah,
you know, we found tapes of relatives and stuff all over. You know, the internet is a wonderful thing. It wasn't that big a deal, but about the time I got really interested, I was like, okay, I'm going to email, you know, find this person, email them. And a lot of times they had, like, sure, I've got tapes. I'll send, you know, I'll transfer them. I'll send you the reels, whatever.
Yeah.
And so that leads you down a whole other rabbit hole. It's grateful to be able to, you know, hear these people talking and playing and be thankful that stuff wasn't lost. Although Dad is on a lot of the tapes, he wasn't recording them himself. You know, it was like lots of times people, Blatt Owen and Tom Carter, who were... But no one's passed away, but Tom Carter's still around. They got a grant, I think, around 1972, and came through Virginia, North Carolina, like everywhere, you know, all these different little rural counties, and just ask around for fiddle players and banjo players, and recorded so much good music. And they got up with Dad, and Dad took him around to see Albert. They recorded Albert, recorded Dad, recorded Corbett Stamper, one of Albert's teachers, John Blevins, a banjo player from White Top. Anyhow... I'm thankful for all that. Thankful that all that stuff exists, because you know it's great to be able to sit down with the people and learn directly from people here.
Yeah,
and it's also great to be able to hear who they learned from.
You know,
hear the recordings of that stuff too. But lots of times you can see, okay, this person passed it down to this person, then they're passing it down to me.
Yeah,
and it is still a big part of life around here. I guess it is everywhere. If you know where there's old time music, but lots of times on a Saturday night, if people aren't playing shows, they just come over. Hang out, you know, and we'll have a jam session, talk about stuff. So,
yeah,
that's the way it goes.
It's cool. I love the idea of like all this free entertainment.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, you know, there's still money pits in it, you know, buying instruments and buying strings and rehairing your bow and stuff, but it's like you're not hiring someone else to entertain you.
Exactly.
You're funding your own entertainment. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool.
And more often than not, I mean, you can play enough music to occasionally get a little tired of it, but you always come back around to it as like, this is the best method of entertainment. Fun is to sit down with your friends and play and talk about the music. So
yeah.
I'm gonna tune this fiddle up and we can.
Yeah, I'm gonna check my banjo. Yeah.
All right.
Whose banjo is that up in the guest room?
That is a banjo that I got several years ago. One nice thing about this area, there's a lot of great local instrument makers.
Yeah.
And that banjo came from a guy named Dave Sturgill, who briefly, well, he made instruments for a long time. He had a company called something like Skyland Music Company or something in Piney Creek, North Carolina, which is about 20 minutes from here. And he had like apprentices and also made instruments himself, turned out a lot of stuff. And I found that banjo, I can't remember, somewhere on the internet and bought it, you know. And but there's a lot of great instrument makers here, too. Both the fiddle I was just playing and this one I'm getting ready to play were both made by Albert Hash at different points. He made about 300 or fiddles, we guess. That's a guess, yeah. Anyhow. And taught a lot of people instrument making. Wayne Henderson, who's a well-known guitar builder, kind of, Albert sort of got him started down the path to building instruments. And there's a lot of people here that build fiddles, banjos, and whatnot.
So the feeling of like the music definitely, it has a really particular feel down here, like the rhythm, and the form of the tunes, and what I've just heard in the last 24 hours, and it's really really great and really unique. It's very specific, and I'm wondering, the instrument makers in this area, can you tell when something was made, like in this area as opposed to like somewhere else? People are making banjos and fiddles all over the world.
Yeah,
you know?
Probably on some level. I can tell when a person like Albert's fiddles. A lot of them have sort of a similar sound.
Yeah.
Built for a certain way of playing. It varies from maker to maker.
Yeah.
But like banjos, a lot of the local banjo makers probably they build open backs because more people play.
Yeah.
Old time around here and. I'm trying to think. Some people don't put scoops on their banjos, and some people do. So, it's probably more on a builder by builder basis.
Yeah, yeah.
It would be my guess. Like a lot of builders stick with a certain sound because they might have different techniques when they play. And some of it has to do with the builder's playing technique too. But yeah, that's interesting. I haven't thought about that a whole lot.
Yeah, because I'm just curious about like you know those apprenticeships and things like you know. Yeah, instruments vary so much. I'm wondering if there's like regional, you know, because like, you ever heard of Boniface banjos?
No,
I haven't. This guy in Denmark.
Uh-huh. Oh wow.
Yeah, and his kids always come to Cliff Top, and I hang out with them. But yeah, he's a Danish banjo maker, and he makes these sort of like monster banjos. Like, I mean, they're beautiful. Beautiful to look at and beautiful sounding. And I don't know if I'm just projecting an otherness onto them.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, or if there is something just sort of like different about them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Instrument making is a fascinating thing. I wished I had took it up because, like I said, Albert Hash's daughter, Audrey, was a good builder. And she taught a lot of people, local people, how to build instruments, but I'm not that good with woodworking, but I wish I'd got into it because I'm sure each builder has secrets passed down from person to person,
right.
You know, about certain ways of putting stuff together.
Well, I'm glad you spend your time playing fiddle.
It's doing both seems like it would be impossible. It's hard to understand how Albert, you know, did that for so long, building all those fiddles and being a great, great fiddle player.
Yeah,
so,
totally.
How about we try one of Albert's tunes? And this one actually has direct local history tied to it. Albert's grandfather's cousin was a fiddle player named Nancy Blevins, and this was probably around Civil War era, roughly, that she was a fiddle player. Right here in Crumpler, Ashe County, North Carolina, she was known. And this, I'm sure that this tune had a different name, but it's been called Nancy Blevins locally because she played it.
Yeah,
and I guess just which is kind of neat that she's remembered, you know, in that form of fashion by a tune that she played with her name. So
didn't you see someone else with a Blevins name earlier? Is there another Blevins?
Jaunt Blevins, yes, that's right. I don't know that he may have been related to her. Jaunt was from Grayson County, Virginia, which is not very far from here in Ashe County. So there's a lot of Blevinses.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's like Smiths. There's a lot of Blevinses around here. But yeah. This tune is actually in a special tuning. It's in D-A-D-A tuning. So
Oh, you mean from high to low?
Yes.
Oh, okay,
yes,
very good, very good.
So, and they call that, around here, they call it straight D.
Straight D.
And just like whenever your girl's tuned to AE, it's straight A. So yeah. That's what Albert or Dad, I've always heard them call it. So anyhow, we'll try a little bit of this one, Nancy Blevins.
Very good.
Yeah, I'm a little bit out of practice on that one, but it's a good, pretty
me
good
too.
Dance, Tanner.
Right on. Yeah. So, how do people, how do folks dance to that one with that form?
You know, I don't know. We only play it for flat footers, so okay. I don't know. Like, It might be a problem if it was a certain kind of square dance. I don't really.
Yeah,
don't
you know. You were saying that like. At a typical dance, would you say like two flat foot and tunes, and then a waltz, and then a square dance, or something like that?
Yeah, there's a good local, healthy dance situation going on around here. There's a dance in Allegheny County, Sparta, called Allegheny Jubilee, and it probably has been going for 30 years or more now. But Mom and Dad played there every Friday night for 13 years when I was growing up.
Yeah,
and then. Once I started my own band, around 2004, I think, was the first year that we had shows, Crooked Road Ramblers. And so we started playing around. And one of our favorite things to do is play some of the local dances. You know, it's good for practice. And it's more like, it's less like a performance and more yeah. like a party, you yeah. know, with your friends. So we play at the Allegheny Jubilee, you know, maybe five times a year or something like that. It's 3 hours. Then there's a dance hall in Freeze, Virginia called the Fries Theater. Really nice building they fixed back up. And they used to have dances there back in the 80s and 90s too, and have started back again. There's also a dance hall, place with a lot of dancing in Galax called the Rex Theater. They do dance there. There's some down around Mount Airy. There's a lot of different old-time dance halls around here where people go flatfoot. But typically the structure, say, we'll start off, we'll do two fiddle tunes or, you know, a fiddle tune, a fast song.
Yeah.
They'll flatfoot, then we'll do a waltz, then we'll probably do another flatfoot, then we'll do a square dance.
Interesting. So
flatfooting is a real big thing at the local dance.
Does, like, everyone do it?
Well, like, the Jubilee probably holds maybe 120 people, and on a good night, you might have like 70 or 80 of those people out there flatfooting.
So are they just sort of all mingling in like a huge...
Yeah. And sometimes they'll get in a circle and people will get in the middle and like do their own, like show off their best steps or whatever.
Yeah. You know,
so
like breakdancing.
Yeah, similar. Yeah, yeah. It's a lot of fun. That's one of my favorite things to do. It's also, the 3 hours is a long time to play.
It's
a little bit like workout. So don't want to do it too often. So
I'm always curious, you know, we have a West Philadelphia square dance, but it's... There's a lot of younger folks, I don't think grew up dancing or doing square dancing. And it's always a little more like educational. It's like there's like a long period of like when I've gone, long period of teaching the form and stuff like that. And then you just do it over and over again for a very long time. You know, maybe do like, you know, 6 or 7 square dances for a night. Mm-hmm. What is it like down here? In this culture, like...
I guess some of it... I mean, these people had to learn somewhere, but I've never seen them do any training at any of these dances. It's always like, if there's new people there, if they do a square dance, the rest of the people will be like, okay, if you mess up the first 5 times, it doesn't matter. We'll show you. You'll get it by the end of it.
So but the 6th time, you're out.
Well, no, not necessarily.
Yeah.
But they don't train it. And the flat footing is more such a free-form sort of thing. Like, you know, it's like people... sometimes feel comfortable just getting up there and doing whatever they want, you know, since there's not any, there's so many different ways to flatfoot.
Do you flatfoot?
I used to.
Used to?
Yeah, when I was a kid, that was one of my musical activities before I played much music.
That's
cool. Flatfooting, but I don't do it so much now.
Yeah.
So.
I've been kind of wanting to learn how to do it,
One of the guys in my band, John Perry, is a really good flatfooter. He's won a lot of ribbons for it over the years, and there's so many different, some people say, you know, don't lift your feet. Mm-hmm. A certain amount of off your ground or then you're clogging. There's lots of different definitions of flat footing versus clogging that go on. They have lots of dance competitions. All the local fiddlers conventions, the dance competitions, of course, a big part of it. So
since there's no like training in the square dance scene, now do people just, are they familiar with the specific dances or do they just know the calls? Are the calls just super standardized?
I think they're just familiar with the dances. Like, they sometimes we might only do 4 square dances a night, you know, in a 3-hour thing.
Okay.
And lots of times there's like Chase the Squirrel, Golden Gate. There's several fairly standard, you know, things that they use for the dance. And they definitely have callers, but lots of times these callers don't even have microphones. So most people, you know, they kind of just leave them to their own devices, assuming, you know, most people get it, got it or already know it. So it's pretty cool. But like I said, the flat footing is a big part of it. They also do a thing called the shuffle, which is so easy and it's so fun to watch because the men line up on one side and the women get on the other and you get a different partner every time through, which is... you know, it's fun. And then they just do whatever kind of dance they want down the middle of everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
So those are pretty popular with the local dancers too. So
right on. What's next on this list?
This is one called Old Sport, and it's another one of Albert's tunes. So let's try a little bit of that one.
I'm gonna need a minute.
All right.
I need to get to Ed.
Oh yeah. I need a tune.
This is Albert, huh?
That is.
On the wall?
Yep.
So there's all these black and white photos on your wall. A lot of these are Albert, right? Is that Albert too?
That is, yes.
And anybody else?
There's one more of my parents with Albert.
Yeah.
And then there's, yeah. So, but there's a great photographer, local guy named Mark V. Sandiford,
yeah,
who's a wonderful photographer who started coming to Galax, I think it was 1966, coming around this area, and he just fell in love with the music and the people.
Yeah.
And he just happened to have a great eye for photography.
Yeah, and he certainly does.
And he still takes pictures. I mean, he still comes around and takes pictures of all the local musicians, but he's nice enough to share his, you know, collection with a lot of people. So,
and you're saying he's particular about not taking photos of jerks?
Yeah, he takes pictures of people that he likes, is a good thing. Yeah. And you know, the nice thing about old time music is most of the people are nice.
Yes,
so there wasn't a whole lot of people that got overlooked whenever Mark took his great photos.
Thankfully. Yeah, it's not like he was like a guy who held grudges or something.
Yeah.
It's just like...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, he took a lot of good pictures. He's a good fiddle player, too. And he spent a lot of time with Uncle Norm Edmonds, the Edmonds family, and kind of plays a little bit like Uncle Norm and some of those other nearby Galax guys.
So this photo of Albert is really cool. Like, it's really well composed. Like, the way it's focused, like, everyone's sort of, like, blurred in the background, but he's right in the middle, and he's got this, like, kind of country shirt with embroidery on it, like tucked in, and it's sort of rolled up, and he's got a belt buckle that I think has a fiddler on it.
It does. I've seen those belt buckles around. I feel like they sold them at Galax Fiddlers Commission at some point, but they're very cool. But I think this picture, if you look, I think it's the cover to Albert Hash Volume 2, fieldrecorder.bandcamp.com,
right on.
And you can see this picture.
Right on.
It is a great, great photo of Albert.
He's got a really interesting look on, too.
Yeah. Albert was really generous with teaching and pretty much everything in life. You know, he was just universally known as a really good person. So,
how old is he in this picture, do you think?
You know, he passed away much younger than you would think. He might be in his 50s or early 60s in that picture, but I think when he passed away, he might have been just in his 60s, you know, and he had a heart attack. But if it had happened 5 years later, I'm sure he would have probably still been with us for a lot longer. But they probably just didn't have the medical knowledge locally that they needed at the local hospital. So, unfortunately.
Well, it certainly seems to be living on.
Yes, for sure.
All right, let me finish Tune a Day. I got distracted.
Thank you. one sport. That's one Albert, actually, there was a fellow up in Pennsylvania that owned some radio stations. His name was Mr. Pate. I'm blanking on his first name.
Do you know where in Pennsylvania?
I don't, but...
It's a big state.
Yes, yes. And he had a radio station, played a lot of old-time bluegrass music, and he would come down and visit Albert, and he owned a couple of Albert's fiddles and other instruments, actually. Anyhow, I guess the radio station would get in all these promo copies of fiddle records, and he would bring them down or mail them to Albert, you know, whenever, I guess if they weren't going to use them. And one of the records that he mailed Albert was by a Texas fiddler named Bill Northcutt, who was excellent Texas-style fiddle player. And that record was on the Stoneway label out of Texas, and that was basically, I can't remember the guy that owned Stoneway, but he produced fiddle records by Chubby Wise, Howdy Forrester, a lot of the great fiddlers of that era, just churned them out, tons of them, you know, especially Chubby Wise, maybe had like 25, 30 full-length LPs on this label. But Bill Northcutt had a couple. Albert listened to the record, and it had that tune we just played, Old Sport. It had another one called Hangman's Reel, and which is real popular. You'll hear that at fiddlers conventions here locally, to Cliff Top, to everywhere you hear Hangman's Reel. And a lot of times it's Albert's version of it.
Oh, okay.
So Old Sport and Hangman's Reel, he learned off this Bill Northcutt record. And Mom and Dad still actually have the copy that Albert learned it off of. I've got it in there, and it's got two X's next to Old Sport and Hangman's Reel, where he would go through the record and mark what he wanted to learn, you know, on the back of the LP cover. So anyhow, those tunes that on the record though sound very little like what he actually turned them into, which is interesting to me.
So he learned them from that LP, but the way that people play it is the way that Albert plays.
Exactly. He recorded them. I think he recorded both of those. I think it was 1974 for Kyle Creed's record label called Mountain Records. It's just called Albert Hatch and White Top Mountain Boys, I think is the name of the record. And Old Sport and Hangman's Reel are on there. And a lot of people took after, especially his Hangman's Reel.
Yeah,
you hear that one a lot.
I hear that all the time, yeah.
And he played it in Cross A, like we're in right now, straight A. And but the Bill Northcutt record, he actually played it in the Black Mountain Blues, C-sharp, whatever, tuning. And so it's almost like Albert just made up parts of Hangman's Reel himself.
It's the same as Calico?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So... but anyhow, they're both good tunes, and Albert totally put his own stamp on those two for sure.
So. Did he sing them?
No, Albert didn't sing. And the Hangman's Reel lyrics, I think that definitely came into creation. I mean, you know, after the tune got popular, I don't know.
Right.
Would probably come up with those in the 80s or something, would be my guess.
Right.
But yeah, they're good tunes.
Yeah, I'm going to have to hear that recording.
Yeah.
You got a lot of recordings to show me when we're not recording ourselves and other people.
That's
right.
That's right.
Very good.
But, so Albert's a great, great fiddle player. And I think that's a good representation of how the fiddling process works in terms of people, you know, really fall in love with versions of a tune. But it's kind of strange how that the version they fall in love with was something almost wholly created by somebody. Learn it from listening to somebody else. So that's the way the fiddling folk process works, I guess. Yeah. For sure.
Right on.
So shall we try another tune? I know we're gonna have to do some tuning for this one, the Lost Train.
Yeah, let's play the Lost Train
Blues. Lost Train Blues. Thank you.
For those of you who are wondering what that squeaky noise is, Kilby's just sort of like sweeping his bow across sideways across the strings.
That's right. That's one I learned from cousin Dean Sturgill, who's from Spencer Branch, North Carolina. He's 81 or 82 now. He doesn't fiddle much.
Oh, so when you say cousin, you don't mean cousin your age.
Exactly.
Okay. Yes. I was wondering why you're like learning all these tunes from this dude your age. Yeah, okay.
No, he's about the same age as my dad. They're both either 81 or Dean might be just a little bit older. I'm not sure which. But anyhow, they both kind of, you know, started playing, I reckon, around the same time. And Dean learned some from Albert, too. Dean's older brother played. And Dean was a great all-around fiddle player. Could play, you know, old-time bluegrass, pretty much whatever you wanted to play, he could play it. And when I was in high school, we used to go and sit down and, you know, just learn tunes from him. And he'd play as long as you want to play, you know, he would play them and play them over and over. So that's kind of one of his specialties. And there is a CD of him on the Field Recorders Collective, too. It's Dean Sturgill. And he's playing, I think there's about 30 tunes on there, and he's also talking. And that's definitely one of them. He talks and is like, you know, the train's headed Spencer Branch or, you know, whoever. Mm-hmm. Kind of does that sort of stuff on it. But that's one good thing about old-time music is it's easy to meet and play with your heroes.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like whenever I first got into it, I was like, okay, you know, obviously your parents are your heroes if they play music, for sure. And then the people that were their heroes, if the ones that are still around, it's easy to go see them. Like, go sit down with Dean, and he was as friendly as could be, nice as could be, you know, and welcoming him and his wife. And I was lucky enough, you know, Dad would talk about these people he used to play with. When I started my own group, one of the legends in my mind was this group called the New River Ramblers that were really popular locally in the 70s, 80s. They won when Galax Fiddlers Convention, which is a huge convention, was kind of at its peak in terms of old time entrance. They won it several times in a row. They were just, you know, very visually entertaining.
Yeah.
In addition to musically.
Was that the video you showed me last night? Yeah.
There's a YouTube video. Look up New River Ramblers.
The banjo player is especially entertaining to watch.
Yes. But they had kind of, most of them, the New River Ramblers didn't exist by the time I started playing, in other words. But one of the main guitar players, John Perry, my dad had been a member of that band briefly. And actually, I was born in 1982 in June. And my dad was at the World's Fair in Knoxville playing a show with the New River Ramblers at the time I was born.
Hmm.
So about, you know, 25 years later, looking for a guitar player in the band. I was at Freeze Fiddlers Convention, and there was John Perry, and we had a jam, and we just, ever since then, we've been in a band together. So it's kind of fun, like I said, you run into your heroes, then you end up in a band with somebody who's both been in a band with your dad, and also is one of your musical heroes, and he's got his own unique style. I mean, there's a lot of great...
Of living and playing.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And there's a lot of local guitar players. One of the things I really like, and it may be more widespread than I realize, there's a lot of different guitar styles. So he basically does runs, you know, all the time.
Yeah.
And when I was really learning more about the music, I fell in love with, probably from the 50s to the 70s, big bands. When I say big bands, I mean several members in old-time groups became a thing. Lots of times it would be two guitars,
right,
a bass, sometimes even a mandolin. So that was kind of my favorite thing, you know, is those big bands with sounds layered upon each other. Like any kind of music, it's neat to hear what each instrument has got its own little role, you know. And I love the two guitars, mandolin and bass, which is what's in my band. But got to play with John, still in my band, thankfully. And one of my other musical heroes was Pico Watson, who's a Callhammer banjo player from Galax, and he was a banjo player with a band called the New Ballard Branch Bog Trotters, who later, like, they were, if the New River Ramblers kind of were the Galax winners in the 70s and part of the 80s, then the Bog Trotters won Galax through the 90s, and they still have a lot of success there. So, anyhow, Pico was their banjo player for a long time, and I think he was their first banjo player, and at one point, my group, about 5 years ago, we were looking for a new banjo player. So Pico played with us. He's just recently kind of retired, but he played with us for about 4 years. But that was nice to get to play with like I said, what other genre of music can you actually be in a band with your, you know, your people you look up to so easily like that, you know, and they're all nice people. So
speaking of Crooked Road Ramblers, where can we like get your CDs? And
The best way is to go to look up Crooked Road Ramblers on Bandcamp. We have three different CDs. There'll be a fourth one up very soon. And we also have a website, crookedroadramblers.com, with our schedule. We're mostly around Virginia, North Carolina, but every now and then we get a little bit further out. So we hope people will come see us. Like I said, the Allegheny Jubilee, Freeze Theater, some of those local dances, if you play old time music or you like old time music, if you're traveling around, it's well worth seeking out those dances just to see all the great dancers. I mean, the dancers are just great. So it's a lot of fun.
Right on. Well, let's get to see and play this Katie did.
All right.
Do you have anything to say about this one?
I do, actually. One of my other fiddle mentors, Johnny Miller, he's 86 years old. Great all-around musician. He was a fiddle player. A lot of people from North Carolina, Virginia migrated to Pennsylvania and Delaware for work, 50s, 60s era of they just moved up there for better jobs, basically. Yeah. And a lot of them happened to play music. Some of them were, there's a great band called Ted Lundy, the Southern Mountain Boys, who had roots down in this area. Traditional bluegrass, almost old time slash bluegrass is what I would say. Anyhow, Johnny and his family moved up there, and there was a couple country music parks. When I say country music, old time bluegrass country, you know, of the time. Sunset Park, New River Ranch, Old Bell Reed, who's I'm sure you know of Old Bell Reed, great musician. Johnny played the fiddle for Old Bell for a very long time, and he also was like a staff musician at those music parks. So he got to play with Hank Williams Sr. When he passed through, you know, people like that. And he's just a great all-around musician. Fiddle, pedal steel, he could do like Merle Travis style guitar. And he was somebody that lived about 15 minutes from where I grew up. And so whenever I got interested in learning, you know, he would come to some of the local jams, and I just ask him, you know, could I come see you sometime? So I would go over to his house, and he knows a lot of tunes that are unique that nobody else locally played too much, like this one Katie did, which is a C tune. He learned it from, I want to think it was one of his uncles that played the fiddle up in Pennsylvania. And also Johnny, like I said, he's got a lot of unusual tunes. I think he Schottisches, like he said, they would even play for Schottisches up there, and his uncle in Pennsylvania played Schottisches on the fiddle and stuff, which is unusual. There's not a whole lot of that, you know, around here. So he's a great great musician, great friend, and recently gave me one of his fiddles and bows, and I really enjoyed playing on that. That was a great honor that he did that, and I appreciate that. So maybe we'll try, this is one we actually put on the new CD, so I'm sort of practiced up on it halfway, as Katie did. So it's in key of C.
Kilby Spencer, thanks so much for being on the show and just inviting me into your home and bringing me all these like awesome musicians to play with and record. It's been a treat.
It's been a blast. We've really enjoyed it too.
Yeah. All right. I'm gonna get tuned. I think it's convinced.
All right.
It's gonna stick. Thank you.
Kilby's band, the Crooked Road Ramblers, just released a new CD called Always Been a Rambler, a title that I think is totally earned based on all the crazy stories Kilby and his girlfriend Kelly told me about their bandmates and had the discretion not to share on the show. Anyway, I'm listening to it right now. It's awesome. Kilby's fiddling is great, obviously. Kelly Brighting has a few solo tracks, and she's a killer banjo player, and her voice is incredible. You should buy it and listen to it so we can talk about how good it is. You can find it at thecrookedroadramblers.bandcamp.com. Then hop over to fieldrecorder.bandcamp.com and get those Albert Hash CDs so you can hear where all this music comes from. I'll make sure and include links on this episode's description, on your podcatching app, on your phone or other device, and on the Facebook page and on the Get Up in the Cool blog on my website, CameronDewitt.com. If you want to support Get Up in the Cool and get access to MP3 downloads, online banjo workshops, and the weekly bonus track, sign up to support the show on Patreon. Jim Hobson and Stratton O'Hammond II signed up last week, and they'll get to hear me and Kilby play this week's bonus track, Say Old Man, Can You Play the Fiddle? If you love the show and want me to keep making it, the best way to let me know is to support Get Up in the Cool on Patreon. Just go to CameronDeWitt.com, click the Patreon button, and sign up at a level that works for you. Once again, thank you so much to Jim and Stratton and all the rest of my Patreon supporters. There's like 28 of you now, which is incredible. I'm just so humbled and grateful that you guys like the show and that you want to support it financially. That's so awesome that you're giving me money when you could just listen to it for free. Thank you so much. Also, you can all get the Get Up in the Cool Volume 1 CD online. It's available for order and download. Just go to my website and click the buy/stream button. Or if you're going to be at Brandywine, Harry Smith, Clifftop, Gennaro, or Rockbridge, you can get a physical copy from me there. It's got all the best tracks from my 2016 interviews, remixed and sort of seamlessly woven together to make a really awesome album version of the show. That's all for now. Thanks for listening, friends. Come back same time next week for more Get Up in the Cool.